What is the latest in D.C. with the Supreme Court nomination? And has Speaker Paul Ryan given up on his health care plan? Can Republican Governor Scott Walker agree with his fellow Republicans who control the legislature about plans to fund transportation and public schools? Is it U.S. Senate race time already? Republicans are already lining up to run against U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, and outside spending groups are already spending big to support or attack them. Why so soon? All that, plus winners and losers and viewer questions on today's On Politics. Welcome to JS On Politics. I'm your host, Mary Spacuzza. First off, we go to Washington, D.C. to talk to Craig Gilbert about the latest on the Supreme Court fight. Now I'm here with Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert. Craig, what's the latest with the Supreme Court nomination fight?
Well, this historic collision that we've been anticipating between Democrats and Republicans over the Gorsuch nomination and over the whole Supreme Court confirmation process is unfolding as we speak. The Republicans have failed to overcome a Democratic filibuster. So they're expected now to take the next step that they have promised, which is to change the Senate rules to essentially end the filibuster for Supreme Court nominations. This is a pretty momentous step. It's been weeks, months, and years in the making, and it has far-reaching implications for the court and for the Senate as an institution.
Where are the Wisconsin senators on this issue?
Well, the short answer is they're pretty much with their respective parties. Senator Baldwin has been supporting the Democratic filibuster, arguing that 60 votes is the sort of appropriate and accepted threshold now for Supreme Court nominees. Democrats are obviously very bitter over the Republicans' failure to advance President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, last year. And Ron Johnson is with his fellow Republicans who will take this next step. They say they're taking it reluctantly, and they blame Democrats for kind of upping the ante and escalating this battle. They point out fairly that Democrats took a similar step in terms of ending the filibuster for other nominees when they were in the majority. But what's going to happen is the Senate Republicans are going to move forward. They're going to end this filibuster, and they're planning to pass and confirm this nomination tomorrow.
You just spoke to House Speaker Paul Ryan, a Janesville Republican. What did he have to say about the failed health care overhaul effort and plans for the future?
Well, he's not kind of waving a white flag of surrender, but at the same time, he's trying to tamp down expectations of a quick resolution. We had an escalation in talks. Vice President Pence was huddling with House Republicans. There was a lot of chatter and speculation about the House making a move, possibly even toward a vote this week. That certainly doesn't look like it's going to happen. But at the same time, the White House is putting pressure on House Republicans to show some progress. They are desperate to show some movement on this issue. It's a hard lift. For Paul Ryan, he doesn't quite have a consensus in his party. When I talked to him, he talked about trying to achieve this through a leadership style of kind of nudging his members toward consensus as opposed to arm twisting, which he says is not effective and is not his style. And he may be right that wouldn't be an effective style, but right now it's sort of unclear what does get the Republicans from point A to point B, because their last furious effort to achieve a consensus failed. There are real differences between the different factions in the House, and that's kind of running up against a shared kind of political need by all the Republicans, including in the House and including in the White House, to try to fulfill this great promise they made to their own supporters to end Obamacare.
Thanks, Craig. We'll be back in touch soon.
Okay, next time.
Thanks. I'm joined in the studio by columnist Daniel Bice and reporter Bill Glauber, and in Madison, Jason Stein is here to join us. Hi, Jason.
Good to be here. Thanks.
So Republicans control everything at the Capitol, but they don't agree on everything when it comes to the state budget. How are negotiations going? Jason, what do you think?
Right. So to be clear, they've got control of all of state government, and the only thing that they need to do to pass a budget is get an agreement amongst themselves, but it's harder to do than it might seem. And the things that they're disagreeing the most on is, number one, transportation. There's a lot of back and forth sniping over how do you fix the hole in the road fund? Do you raise taxes or do you just delay and cut projects? And then there's also some back and forth over whether or not to take the large increases for K-12 schools that Scott Walker wants. Seems like Senate Republicans are willing to go along with those. Assembly Republicans are clearly wanting to pare those back some. And then last, they all agree that they want to cut taxes, but they don't yet agree on how to do it. Scott Walker has really talked about cutting taxes for broadly for, you know, in small amounts for large groups of people in the state. Some Republicans have kicked around the idea of targeting those tax cuts more, possibly, you know, doing some things that would only impact certain, like, say, business owners or people like that to a greater degree.
It seems like there's been quite a bit of fighting over roads and the order of projects. We heard from business leaders saying they wanted one project done. Assembly seems to be focused on something else. The Senate. Where are people at when it comes to road funding?
You know, it's really tough to see how they solve this because they have a bunch of possible solutions and they don't want any of them. You know, I don't think they there really is very limited appetite to raise the gas tax. There's maybe a little appetite among some to raise fees for vehicles, but not a lot of that. And then you've got borrowing. They don't really want to borrow. You've got cutting road projects or delaying them. That's also not very popular. You had some big businesses like Miller Coors and Palermo's Pizza that just on Tuesday were writing a letter to lawmakers and saying, hey, look, don't delay the Interstate 94 East-West project west of downtown Milwaukee.
Go ahead.
There's no solution for them. There's no good solution for them.
So you were at the hearing yesterday. What was that like?
Yeah, so yesterday's hearing, it was interesting because a lot of the lawmakers were kind of fighting amongst themselves about transportation. But members of the public, while some did weigh in on transportation, a lot of them were saying we need more funding for public schools. There was a heavy presence of school administrators, teachers, students, and parents. And it was interesting because I think that after, you know, several years of budget cuts, they are very hungry to see Walker's proposal to send more money back towards schools. We'll see if Republicans in the Assembly and Senate agree with that plan and if they can come up with one that they all are comfortable with.
So there's control and then there's control. And right now there's, well, and you know, if there isn't a new funding source, the issue becomes priority. And that's what seems to be going on with Robin Voss and the Milwaukee business community. One has one priority, which is to fix the interstate near Racine. That's Robin Voss's, and then the Milwaukee business community wants to get the zoo interchange completed right here.
It's amazing all the projects they took on at the same time. Now they got to pay for them. That's what's occurring. I think the education piece of it is very interesting. Scott Walker has been on a tour of public schools lately, so education funding clearly important for him as he sees his reelection in 2018, clearly trying to push more money into education, and then seems to be getting pushed back in the legislature.
Well, we saw in the Marquette poll that funding for schools was a very, very popular issue. But in terms of increasing funding for roads, gas tax not popular, borrowing not popular, taking money from other agency was the only option the public likes. But of course, they didn't say which agencies or which funding.
Yeah, the reality too for schools is that if you look at school districts all around the state, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in referendums getting passed or getting at least put before voters this spring. And so, you know, I think the governor's proposal is clearly in some ways a relief valve to have the state try and come in and take some of that burden off of local taxpayers. And that's, you know, one reason why I think you see it out there in the first place.
Actually, in the Milwaukee area, most of the referendums went down in the Milwaukee area, like in Menominee Falls and so forth. So I'm wondering if, you know,
wheel tax was not a hit, obviously, here.
Yeah, and the wheel tax wasn't. It seems like the public has done at least in this area, enough, they feel, on the referendums, and they believe somebody else should be putting in the money.
We've actually got a short video that was filmed at yesterday's public hearing with a couple of Republican lawmakers talking about road funding transportation.
We asked that question when we met with the governor. We asked, you know, if we put the east-west in there, how much money does it cost to keep it moving forward? And also, is the governor going to veto it? The governor's obviously made a decision that he wanted to delay the east-west and go with the north-south. And so there's some things that we can do as legislators. There's other things we cannot do. And the governor has the veto pen on the east-west, and the governor says with his administration that the east-west is not a priority right now. It's very difficult for us, the way the process works, to say it's going to be a priority because we don't have the veto pen. So we'll hear to the stakeholders. I know in the Milwaukee community it means a lot to a lot. I know personally, we hear a lot about economic development. I like to spend time with my four kids. And sometimes when I'm stuck on the east-west waiting for those bottlenecks, I think I'd rather be at home playing with the kids in the yard.
I think it's ironic coming here today. We basically had to go through a detour to get here. I went to the medical college just maybe a week, 10 days ago. Same thing. Very difficult to get to. This is a vital economic engine for our state that we're sitting in right now. And to continue to bottle that up is going to be a challenge. I do think with the input from the business community in our area, I do think the governor is willing to listen, but that may not necessarily be where he is today. But we know it throughout this transportation discussion that he is open to change.
So, and the biggest thing on that too is we want to make sure there's already been tens of millions of dollars put into the east-west. We want to make sure that there's going to be no moving backwards, that those are lost dollars now. We want to make sure the investment the state has already made in the east-west is not lost because it's being delayed.
We'll have more updates on the budget soon, but we want to talk a little bit about campaigns. So we're still waiting to hear who's going to get in the race for governor, but clearly people
Besides
Scott Walker, who is ready. But people seem to be lining up to run against U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Bill,
absolutely.
Is the race on already?
The race is on. Tammy Baldwin just raised $2.2 million in the latest quarter. There are a whole bunch of Republicans who want to run against her who are looking at the race. Nicole Schneider, the daughter-in-law of one of the big, not the founder, but the person who pushed along Schneider Trucking. Leah Vukmir, the state senator from Wauwatosa, has been at every Lincoln Day dinner, doing every radio interview, trying to keep herself in the race. Kevin Nicholson, who is a former Democrat turned Republican, a U.S. Marine captain, a former U.S. Marine captain, a local businessman. He's really seems to be in the race. Eric Hovde, a businessman from Madison who took on Tommy Thompson in 2012. He's looking at the race. And then sort of the two outliers would be Dale Coyenga,
who we just saw,
and Scott Fitzgerald. But, you know, in the end, I think people are going to be focusing on the first four people. And the race in the Republican side effectively began when Richard Uihlein, a big donor to Republican causes, basically funded a super PAC to urge Nicholson to get in the race. He put in $2 million. There's more money to come. This race is on.
It's on, but no one's announced. No one's declared, but everybody's getting people
interested,
behind the scenes. Well, and they're lining up their support. They're putting together campaign teams, and they've already started doing some negative attacks on one another. So that's how you know it's on, because of that. And with Richard Uihlein, Dick Uihlein, this is just the first, I believe, of the money he's going to put into the race.
Oh, he's promised to put more money in.
And he's from Uihlein.
Okay. Yes. Lives in Lake Forest, Illinois, has interests in Wisconsin, helped bankroll support for Ron Johnson in the 2016 Senate race. The reason why all this money is pouring in and all this interest is pouring in so early is Republicans are trying to turn Wisconsin permanently red, or at least, you know, temporarily permanently red. and if they get Baldwin, that's what does it. And Baldwin is vulnerable. Trump won here. You know, people think that the off-year election could go okay for the Republicans, especially here. A lot's dependent on what's going on in Washington and the chaos there.
I mean, another factor in why Uihlein had to get in early for Kevin Nicholson is that there are two of the candidates who have money, and that's Nicole Schneider, who's, you know, as you said, has money through the Schneider Trucking, and then Eric Hovde, who owns multiple banks and properties and much many things in Madison. I think he ran last time in 2012.
He spent $6 million the last time.
He spent about $6 million, and I think he's prepared to spend more than that if he runs this time. So Kevin Nicholson, not independently wealthy, but now he's got a big-time
donor,
mega donor, to say we're with him. So, you know, the problem this creates is for any other candidate, like Leo Vukmir or Dale Quing, is to show that they will be able to have the same resources.
But, you know, there is, you know, given the way this race could shake out, you could have two people not in politics, Schneider and Nicholson, and then you could have Leo Vukmir, who's in politics, who is popular among the talk radio audience in southeastern Wisconsin. So there is a path for her, a lane for her, and, you know, she is a...
For Nicole Schneider.
No, there's for Leo Vukmir. There's still, even without the money, there's still a path for
somebody. Well, the thing is,
like
we don't know very much about Nicole Schneider, and there was this opposition research document that floated around, and talk radio promoted it. It had to do with some of her tweets and social media posts that seemed to suggest that she had been critical of Donald Trump and some other conservatives in the past and supportive of some liberals. Her side countered with a bunch of tweets and Facebook posts showing that she was actually very much a conservative. But, you know, we don't know very much about her. And then somebody anonymously posted the speech by Kevin Nicholson from the year 2000. You know a little bit about this. He spoke
at
the...
Was that a Dem convention speech?
He was head of the College Republicans nationally.
College Democrats?
I mean, College Democrats nationally. He spoke, and he gives a speech in which he speaks out in favor of...
A woman's right to choose.
Abortion rights. Speaks out in favor of Al Gore and is critical of George Bush. So so there are more things like this to come, I expect.
So presumably somebody like Leo Vukmir has been more thoroughly vetted because she's run for office. She's been in the public eye than people who've been...
Still, but she also has a record that people can look into and see, you know, why'd you vote this
way? I don't
think
anybody is thoroughly vetted, to be quite honest, you know, in a race like this, where it goes statewide and you just don't know what's out
there. Frankly, you know, I don't think Terry Baldwin came under a great deal of scrutiny in 2012 because so much of the fighting went on between the Republicans. It was only late in that race that there was much criticism of her voting record. So I think her voting record plus how she handled the Thoma VA scandal is going to be big this time.
The other thing about this, you know, we forget, I mean, there is an incumbent. She's Tammy Baldwin. She has taken some definitive steps here, you know, joining leadership among the Democrats, being on the sort of anti-Trump bandwagon, which Republicans say, well, that's a mistake. But, you know, Trump is down. His favorabilities are way down nationally, not as much in this state. So, you know, she's taken a very measured way forward of being an alternative to what's going on
in Washington. I'm guessing she's hoping that Trump's... the rest of Trump's first 2 years go like his first 100 days, which has been...
Well, the first 100 days have been a disaster,
right,
to be
But
blunt.
It is obviously a gamble because you have no idea what's going to be happening then. The one issue that she's taken a strong stance on, and you won't know what people are going to be thinking about that in a year and a half, is Obamacare. She has taken a definitive position that Obamacare is good. Russ Feingold voted for it and then obviously had to pay a price losing the seat because of that. Support right now for Obamacare is high, but again, you don't know if there are major premium increases before the election, what impact that has on the race.
Dan mentioned it again, the Thoma VA scandal, which is going to be a big part of the race, and especially would be a huge part of the race if a military veteran like Nicholson were to be the Republican nominee.
And you have to think, you know, that no matter who's going to be the nominee, that's going to be brought up. And it was brought up in the Johnson-Feingold race,
right,
but that was a standoff because they both kept on saying, you could have done more, no, you could have done more, back and forth. Here, none of the people on the one side was involved at all, so the scrutiny will be all on Tammy
And on
Baldwin.
Paper, this is a formidable Republican field. You look at any one of those people I mentioned before, they can all make the case of wanting to be in the U.S. Senate. You compare and contrast what's happened on the Democratic side in the governor's race, where there is nobody, and even people who are being mentioned, you know, just don't really stack up. This is a deep bench.
We say all that stuff, but you know, she was a very good campaigner last time. She surprised me how well she did. And
this is Tammy Baldwin
against Tommy Thompson. I mean, if going into that race, if you said Tammy Baldwin's going to run against Tommy Thompson, who's going to win? everybody would have picked Tommy Thompson, but she ran a great campaign. So you don't want to count her out, especially a year and a half before the election.
Absolutely
500
not.
Days before the election.
But it is a formidable, it's a formidable race.
We'll have plenty of time to fight about this. Next up, we're going to go to winners and losers, and we're going to start with Jason Stein in Madison. So Jason, who's your winner this week?
Well, I've just, fresh off the presses, we have the winner of, it looks like George Gorsuch is going to eventually be confirmed by the Senate and, receive a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court. This was a big thing for Republicans because they have been fighting amongst each other. They have not really had a legislative victory in Congress. They obviously, their attempt to repeal Obamacare has so far given them nothing but grief. But they're moving forward here, and that sort of brings me, the winner brings me to the loser. Should I go ahead and give that?
Please.
Go for it.
Who's your loser? Losers.
My loser is the filibuster. And we can go ahead and associate the filibuster here with Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader. The Democrats invoked the filibuster today. Republicans used the so-called nuclear option and voted along party lines to shut that down and sort of end that practice. Democrats had shut down the filibuster on court nominees before. Republicans sort of elevated that by using it today against nominees, a nominee for the Supreme Court. And, we'll see what effect that has on the Senate's committee and, overall operations, in the years to come.
Thank you. What about you, Bill? Who's your winner?
A local woman, Christy Yang, the first female Hmong judge in the nation. She was elected to the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. And for progressives and or Democrats, I realize it's a nonpartisan race, but it has to be a breath of fresh air, an actual young, new face on the scene. And, she ran a very effective campaign against a veteran and won that race. Loser, Devin Nunes, the House Intelligence Chairman. He's stepping aside from leading the investigation into Russia's efforts to disrupt the 2016 presidential election. People were mentioning him like Get Smart or Inspector Clouseau, which are, the sort of bumbling idiots of the 1960s film and television. And we sort of need to update it, and maybe Devin Nunes can get his own show. He really was a bumbling investigator and really did just, made a hash of it, to
wasn't
be honest.
He saying like a week ago that he wasn't going to step down, and then he kind of vanished for a while?
Yeah, and then he blamed left-wing groups for bringing charges against him in front of the House Ethics Committee, and the House Ethics Committee is looking at them, so he's out. They'll get a couple of new guys in, but I think most attention is going to turn to the Senate Intelligence Committee and their investigation.
Do you think it's the last we've heard of him?
No. I'm sure there's, this investigation is going to go on for months, if not years. So I think we're going to hear from him again.
He's very eager to be a surrogate for the Trump team, too. So I wouldn't be surprised if he moves from this position, where he's supposed to be an impartial investigator, to where he becomes much more of a partial advocate for the Trump team as things go forward.
And I don't know if I would want to be advocating for Trump on this issue. I think it's a very dicey proposition.
He supported him early.
This is very serious.
He was on his transition team, too. So you have to remember that. So
maybe he can join the administration.
So my
what about
winners
your
and
winner?
Losers. I try to stay local most of the time, but this time I'm choosing Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. They just shuffled the National Security Council, and Steve Bannon, the person everybody who knew it was on there, has been bounced from it. And this has put McMaster into a position of control on this important committee. And then my loser, we've already talked about a little bit, it's the Milwaukee business community, which came out and you were there in force to try to tell the legislature, we need you to get the zoo interchange and
East-West right.
done. And before everything was done, you've got Robin Voss saying, I think we need to focus on what's going on in Racine. So he's the loser. I also just posted a story on, I guess you would have to say a winner and a loser. The county auditor's trying to investigate the the sheriff's office for its handling of this incident with a guy at the airport earlier this year. And the sheriff had stonewalled him and wouldn't let him interview anyone on the staff. And the county board now has agreed to let him spend, the auditor spend $35,000 to take the sheriff to court to force the investigation to go ahead. So I guess you've got the auditor as a winner and the sheriff as a loser right now on that investigation.
And the county board will vote on that
on the 20th.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I think the next segment is viewer questions, if you're ready for them.
We're ready.
Okay, so we got some coming in late, and I added a few, but one had to deal with surveillance of President Trump. So people are talking about, you know, was he under surveillance? Was he wiretapped by Obama? Did Susan Rice break the law? What do you think we're going to hear on Trump and surveillance?
Boy,
besides from him.
Well, we're going to hear the pushback from Trump claiming he was surveilled, and then we're going to, you know, get to maybe the reality of the matter, which may be that there were conversations of others who were under surveillance that brought in the Trump people on the transition. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pushing back and forth on this. Susan Rice, they're trying to get in the mix. Trump claimed that she had committed some crimes but offered no explanation. She apparently had asked for the unmasking of who was mentioned in some of these intercepts. It's very complicated. It's going to take, you have two things happening. It's at warp speed with Twitter and social media, and then it's at investigative speed with the FBI and with Congress.
Which usually isn't quite as fast, but does seem to be moving quickly. What you're going to have is two tracks of news. You're going to have, on the one hand, the conservative media that focuses on Susan Rice and what was going on in the Obama administration, what information they collected, and then you're going to have the other, which is primarily the mainstream media, explaining what the investigation is doing and what it's turning up. So you just sort of have to keep those two tracks together and figuring out what's going on with each. And Trump's going to focus on the one with Susan Rice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth noting Dan's loser of the week, Devin Nunes, was outside of the Trump administration, was maybe the foremost proponent or a person out there making the argument that the Obama administration had been handling the wiretapping or handling surveillance improperly. And, you know, his efforts to do that ended up forcing him off the main committee. So you just lost one of the major voices on the Republican side to sort of advance that argument in the public
space. But, you know, it's going to be like the election. If what you're reading is Breitbart and watching Sean Hannity and reading the Washington Times, you're going to get one set of news. And if you are reading the New York Times, Washington Post, and following along with the investigation, you're going to get a completely different picture as to what's going on.
And also, you know, the Senate was adequately able to investigate Watergate back in the 1970s. It really, you know, whether Congress is up to this is of some question, just because of the politicization. And let's face it, a lot of these characters just are not up to some of the folks who were back in the 1970s. They just don't have the qualifications or the temperament to do this. They haven't shown that yet. So it's going to come out. It's going to take time. It's not going to be at warp speed, internet speed. It's going to take time, and it's going to take months.
Seems like a lot has happened so far, which brings us to the next question. And Jason, I think we'll throw this one to you to start with. It says, Donald Trump is having a rough first 100 days. That would be accurate. What do you think Hillary Clinton would have accomplished so far if she was elected? What new things would she have promoted or gotten past? That's a tough one, but I guess we could also say, do you think her first 100 days would have been as rough as Trump's? What do you think, Jason?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, the one problem about a counterfactual like that is, would Hillary Clinton have the same Congress that President Trump has right now? I mean, because to the extent that she would have won election, then you would have expected that maybe some of those other Senate races would have gone differently as well. You know, races like the one in Wisconsin. I guess one thing that you could say is clearly one area where Trump has had a lot of, or at least some success, is in undoing a lot of the executive orders that President Obama passed when he was in office. Obviously, not all of Trump's executive orders have gone well. The ones that he made regarding refugees and, you know, Muslim, you know, from majority Muslim nations, that obviously has gotten hung up in the court system and has really not been able to be implemented perhaps as cleanly as some people might have thought going into his administration. So I guess, you know, at the end of the day, the biggest difference I think that you would have between a President Clinton and President Trump is you would have had, you would not have had all these executive orders being undone by the president. And, you know, you would not have had some of these new orders that Trump has pursued, like the immigration and refugee order.
Just for the future, I hate these questions. What if somebody were in for whatever? We don't know. It's hard. It's
Should
hard
I start
enough.
Writing our viewer questions?
Well, it's hard enough yes. to figure out what is going on instead of discussing what might have happened with whatever.
One last thing. Let's not forget, despite the disaster of Trump's first 100 days, and it has not gone well, he does get a Supreme Court nominee through, it appears, Gorsuch. That is huge by any standard.
Well, we're out of time for this week, so please come back and join us next week for JS on Politics. Thanks again.